This is Dave Hammack at the Valdez Civic Center Auditorium, or Ballroom. The National Transportation Safety Board, NTSB, has announced they'll be here any time for a briefing. The NTSB, of course, is conducting the actual investigation of the tanker. There's some folks coming in now. We'll be standing by later today. We're still anticipating the possibility or likelihood of an Exxon press conference as well. This morning we heard from a variety of Valdez and Cordova fishermen. As I'm speaking, members of the NTSB investigation team are arriving in the Valdez Civic Center Ballroom, taking up positions to begin addressing the press. Events are happening with not a lot of cohesion and advance notice. We will do our best to continue to provide you with the coverage. It looks like we'll be starting the conference in a matter of minutes. I'm going to give it back to the studio briefly while we get ourselves organized and set for the conference, but stand by within about 5 or 10 minutes at the outside. Perhaps sooner we'll be having the NTSB briefing here at the Valdez Civic Center Ballroom. Back to you, James.
Thank you, David, and this is KCHU Public Radio for Prince William Sound. We'll go to the National Transportation Safety Board press conference just as soon as they get underway. And until then, a little bit more mellow music from the Windham Hill collection.
The tank ship, Exxon Valdez. We are, at the present time, in our preliminary stages of the investigation. This has included a tour of the vessel, a collection of various documents, and now we're in the process of reviewing the documents this morning. This afternoon, we hope to commence interviewing the various crew members, and the interview is an informal procedure. It's not under oath. The interviews will be conducted by the four people from NTSB and a Coast Guard representative. And they'll be conducted starting at Coast Guard headquarters in Valdez. We expect to complete the interviews sometime during the week. We will review the data over the weekend. And then this will be followed by a formal procedure. It has been determined that the formal procedure will be a public hearing to be conducted in Anchorage within 1 to 3 weeks. The date of the public hearing will be announced as soon as its plans can be firmed up for it. At the public hearing, there will be spokesmen representing Exxon. There will be a spokesperson representing the Coast Guard. It's expected that Commander Waldron will be the Coast Guard spokesperson. And the public hearing naturally will be announced and completely open to the public. In the investigation, we are conducting under NTSB rules. The Coast Guard, in all marine investigations, is a party to our investigations. And this, in our parlance, means a full participating partner in the investigation. I think that's the status of our effort at this time. I'd be pleased to answer any questions that I might have.
What exactly are you going to be asking the captain and the crew members?
We have the customary questions that we ask will lead to the arrival of the vessel in port, what it did in port, what it did departing port up to the time of the grounding.
There seems to be some question about who was in charge of the ship at the time that it
went. We will endeavor to ascertain with certainty who had the con of the vessel and when the con was transferred, if it was indeed transferred from one officer to another.
Has the blood test, sir, been, is it ready? Do you know the results of it?
The results are not available yet.
Can you share what the results are?
When the results are known, we will certainly share with the public, and we would expect by the time the public hearing is available that prior to that time, they will be available.
Do you think sometime today or tomorrow?
I would say in the next 3 days now.
Why were the tests sent outside? Why couldn't they have been done in a lab in Anchorage?
Why couldn't it be done in Valdez?
We have selected laboratories that we use, and the samples were sent to these laboratories that we customarily use.
Were they sent to one lab? Did you send them to a couple of different labs to get comparing?
They were sent to different labs. I can't give you the names of the labs.
I do not know. Each one was sent to a different lab, or?
I cannot answer the question. Sorry.
Do you have a list of witnesses? In what order will they come before you? Who's first?
We would hope to interview the captain and the third officer on the Valdez first. Followed by the other watch personnel, the steersman or helmsman, and the lookouts. And we would ask questions or interview injury personnel. They're on watch. Any other crewmen that might have been in the vicinity on the bridge in the engine room who might have information for us. The present procedure we're going through is simply to interview people. This is a screening process to determine a witness list. But our tentative witness list is, as I've described, the captain first and the third officer. But we, and then after that, the personnel on watch.
Have you been notified whether some or all of these people will be accompanied by attorneys?
They might be. When a person is interviewed, they have a perfect right to be interviewed or to be represented by counsel. And if the person wants counsel, we certainly honor that. That's his right.
Would you be interviewing anyone in town that might have knowledge of their activities before they got on the boat? Or
we would be very interested in learning anything about the activities ashore that might have a bearing on the casualty. We do not have anything that I can relate to at this time, but we would welcome information that would help us to determine if there are any causal factors.
Could you give us just a general sense of the rules regarding use of alcohol by crew members with this sort of a ship, and also if somebody would have prior convictions in, say, such as DWIs, if they would be qualified to pilot a ship like this?
There are federal regulations, what we call Coast Guard regulations, that specify the time from having a drink until a person goes on watch and what his blood alcohol content must be. Those are in regulations. I cannot give you the regulation, but they're written down.
Why is it important to have a pilot on board one of the tankers in these waters?
These waters are known as pilotage waters, and pilotage waters have been in the past determined to be certain waters where it requires a pilot who has local knowledge. And if these waters have been previously determined by the Coast Guard to be pilotage waters, then a pilot of some type is required.
What makes them pilotage waters?
A determination that special or local knowledge is necessary to safely guide a ship through the waters. It's a decision made after reviewing the nature of the waterway.
And if someone doesn't have that knowledge, isn't in charge of a ship, that breaches regulations?
That would be a breach of regulations. Please let me explain to you, though. The NTSB role is to determine the cause of the accident. We're strictly a fact-finding agency. We will use the facts we determine to develop the cause of the accident. We will determine what recommendations could be made to prevent future accidents from happening. The ultimate product of our effort is to make recommendations. Enforcement is not our role.
You were on board the vessel yesterday, or can you share any observations about the accident from what you saw?
No, nothing that's beyond what's in the press, and that the oil is still escaping. The oil is being transferred to another tanker, the Exxon Baton Rouge, alongside. More pumps are expected to be arriving to speed up the transfer process. Then, as explained to you in the press conference by Exxon, they're endeavoring to form a team to look at the various options by which the vessel could be salvaged.
Did you look at the instrumentation? Were you surprised at the size of the impact?
We were judging where the vessel was located. And just knowing such descriptive material has been provided to us by Exxon, represented by these graphics here, resulting from the divers' investigation, we were not terribly surprised at the extent of damage. It was very heavy damage, but it's certainly feasible to occur.
Is that a result of the speed of the craft?
Well, that would be speculative. I would like to not go into any speculative areas, just a brief view of what we're doing. We're gathering facts on which to make a determination.
Will it be possible to get transcripts of either communications with the Coast Guard or the copies of the log entries? I mean, will this be released?
Yes. Those will eventually become a matter of public record, of course. They would be put into our docket. And once they're in our docket, they're completely available to the public. You must understand, at this point, we're busy investigating an accident, and we don't have time to make copies available to the public because this would interrupt our procedures. You've got to keep first things first, so to speak.
The rest of your crew is still out on the vessel, are they?
No, the other crew are in town. On my left is Mr. Leon Kacharian, and a member of our four-member panel.
I see. And this public hearing in Anchorage, you said, be 1 to 3 weeks from when? From this next weekend, or from?
I would say from right now.
From right now?
Will your investigation be focusing in any way on the Coast Guard's role in this, or is it strictly limited to Exxon?
No, we will be concerned with anyone's role that could have prevented the accident or reduced the effects of it. So if we find any Coast Guard participation that could be improved, we might make recommendations in that way.
Subpoenas issued to anyone with the Coast Guard at this point?
The Coast Guard, on our behalf, has issued subpoenas to some of the crew to be available. And
more than the additional three people that were subpoenaed previously?
Well, I believe it's four.
Four? Okay.
Mr. Woody, could you elaborate, please, on the alcohol rules? What are the rules regarding consumption of alcohol before or during boarding the vessel?
I respond to a previous question by saying that there were regulations that clearly said when a person could have his last drink before going on a watch. 4 hours sticks in my mind, but I'm estimating now from memory, and the blood alcohol content was very low, like I think 0.01%. And again, I hate to publicly give these figures out because it's the sort of thing you get the decimal point in the wrong place. But they're a matter of record in the federal regulations.
What is the spirit of those rules? What are we trying to do here?
We're trying to ensure that the person on in charge of a vessel or performing any capacity in a vessel, operating vessel in any way, or contributing to the operation of it is fully in possession of his faculties. It's not in any way affected by any detrimental drugs or alcohol.
Tell us how serious a breach it may be for someone without this pilotage endorsement to be the operating system.
Well, this is an enforcement matter, which is the purview of the Coast Guard. The Coast Guard is an enforcement agency, and one of the Coast Guard concerns will be to determine if any federal regulations have been violated, and if they are, in all cases of accidents, the Coast Guard then will have procedures that they follow. Regarding the certification and licensing of the person.
Is it logical, or is there a connection between the likelihood of an accident and the lack of this certification on a particular officer's part?
I'm not sure I understand the gist of your question. Is it that you want to know how serious it is, or how lack of qualification? A person not having the certification might be completely capable of navigating the vessel down that reach, but that reach does require a pilot's endorsement. So a person might be capable of not having it.
Do you know the exact time between the accident and when the blood alcohol tests were administered?
Not precisely, no, I do not.
Do you have a rough estimate?
I would like to defer to that, and we will be having meetings with you from time to time as there are highlights or information to pass on to you, and I'll try and find out.
Do you have any, you had mentioned that, of course, you look at other factors, like, for example, any policies that the Coast Guard might have had in place or could have had in place that might have prevented or ameliorated the extent of the accident. How large is the scope of that investigation going to be? For example, it appears that the Coast Guard changed its policies in 1982, and that from 77, when the terminal opened, until 1982, they had monitored and maintained contact with the vessels out all the way to Naked Island, considerably past where they do it now. Would you go back that far, for example, in looking at their policies and what they do now and what they've done in the past?
That is possible, yes.
What do you hope?
I think that would be the sort of thing that we would consider looking into, yes.
Are you satisfied with the reach of the Coast Guard radar that monitors the movement of the ships?
At this point in the investigation, we have nothing to cause us to believe that the reach is too short. We will look into this matter to see if it should be longer and what the benefits might be.
Was the ship, in fact, when it was making its maneuver, was it, in fact, out of the reach of the radar?
I believe the Coast Guard has indicated that it was at the outer fringes of the radar coverage. Now, we are going to ascertain how good the radar coverage is at that range. That'll be part of our effort. We will be doing that.
When you say outer fringes, does that mean they would have seen the maneuver or would not have seen the maneuver?
We will determine whether they will or not, and how well.
With all the talk about the blood alcohol tests and the blood alcohol levels, where is that in your priority of investigation? Is that the first thing you need to find out?
One of the members of our team is a mariner. He's also a psychologist. This is one of the areas which he will be preparing a lot of questions on. We will be concerned with this. And I think the answer is that how much of a factor we can identify it to have been, our interest will be at that level. In other words, if we find it was a causal factor, then we'll be very interested.
They had dropped the pilot off shortly before midnight, or before midnight at Rocky Point in that vicinity. Did they make a crew change at midnight? I don't think that question had been asked. A normal shift change would come at midnight. Did they change crew at midnight?
It appears at this time that there was no crew change at midnight by the officer. There was no change of the watch officer. There was a change of the steersman, I believe.
Last question is, do you have any idea now why the skipper may have gone below deck?
We do not. This is very high on our agenda to determine.
Was the ship speeding, sir?
I would say not. But based on our preliminary information, it does not indicate that they were.
If the blood alcohol test comes back positive, what kind of trouble can he go to?
Well, this is a Coast Guard enforcement action. See, where we differ from the Coast Guard is that we are strictly a fact-finding agency. Coast Guard has a dual role. They do fact-finding in action to determine cause, and then they have procedures that they will follow if there's an indication that regulations have been violated that can look to the person's revocation of his license or his seaman certification. But this is, again, a Coast Guard area of preeminence, and it wouldn't be proper for me to speculate on that.
I wonder if you can clarify an earlier answer to a layperson like me. News that the person piloting the ship didn't have the proper credentials in such an area raises a presumption in my mind that that's probably a contributing factor in the accident. Does it raise that sort of presumption in your mind?
Well, it raises a concern in our mind. There are many people who are very capable of doing a certain function who might not have the certification to do that function. Clearly, a person who is getting enough transits to eventually take the pilotage examination might be fully competent before he gets the certification. And indeed, we would expect him to be competent before he receives the certification. So somewhere along in the learning process, he certainly is competent to do it. That's not a good answer to your question, but the lack of certification becomes an enforcement area, which is a Coast Guard concern. Our concern is how competent was the mariner.
This may end up just being a technical breach as opposed to a clear indication of a lack of competence.
And our area is to determine how competent the mariner was, the officer in charge of the watch. And if there's any other problems or encumbrances that he was faced with.
Would this have been a sort of training practice at all to put this guy in charge?
No, I wouldn't necessarily say that.
I don't
have reason to say that, and I would lie not to speculate.
Were all the warning buoys along the way operational?
They were all operational. Coast Guard has checked them out and found they were all working.
Either the other two mates, did they have the proper pilot credentials to operate the ship?
I do not have that information at this time. We find it out.
Again, I want to go back to this question of...
I got to end this in just a couple of minutes because I must get back to my primary job of investigating an accident.
Okay.
So, if you'll excuse me now, I would like to end it at this time. Thank you all.
Could you give us your name again, please?
Give us your name and spell it.
William Arwood. William Arwood.
How do you spell the last name? This is Dave Hammack at the Valdez Civic Center. William Woody, who is an investigator with the NTSB, is just concluding a conference. He has basically said that he's done for now and that he wants to get back to the work of conducting the investigation. The very short briefing, not much real or new information. Basically, William Woody has outlined the fact that the NTSB is essentially has an investigatory role. They are not responsible for assessing punitive remedy. They don't assign the punishment to wrongdoers. They're not even specifically charged with finding out if laws were broken, although in the course of their investigation they may make recommendations for the material to be reviewed by the proper law enforcement authorities. Their role evidently is to determine what exactly caused the ship to go up on the reef, what chain of events, what problems in procedure, what problems in equipment, what decisions made by various personnel may have contributed to the Exxon Valdez ending up on Bly Reef. Again, the press conference not really answering questions. The press putting the question over and over again regarding the blood alcohol tests the blood tests that have been administered to the three crew members. Evidently, we're not going to find out the results of those tests today. Most likely, it may be 2 to 3 days before that information is available. Again, questions raised: why wasn't the analysis done in Anchorage or even in Valdez, rather than the samples being shipped outside? No clear answer to that, other than that evidently is a procedure, and certain labs under contract to NTSB were used. It is about 10:26 here at the Valdez Civic Center. We're anticipating Exxon coming in about 11 o'clock. They had scheduled a press conference earlier. We have heard no changes in that, although we've not been able to get confirmation of that time either. We will be back on the air at 11, at least to give you a briefing and hopefully to bring you the Exxon press conference. I want to thank KCHU volunteer Bruce Good and Kim Hartman for their assistance in this broadcast. James Winchester was engineering back at KCHU. I'm Dave Hammack, and this is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.
And this is KCHU, listener-supported radio for Valdez, Cordova, and around Prince William Sound. As David said, we've just been listening to a press conference with the National Transportation Safety Board.